Okay, in the first class, this is only the second class, so you didn't miss much if you only tuned in today. But in the first class, we looked at the basic question, which is, what did Moshe Rabbeinu receive on Har Sinai? And we saw a bunch of different sources. One group of sources seemed to indicate that Moshe Rabbeinu received everything during his Sinai experience. Not just the things that would make sense, but even things that don't make much sense. Things like the whole of the Tanakh, which doesn't make any logical sense, because we know that the Tanakh was written later, full of dates and places and people. The whole of the Mishnah being a book of, you know, oral law that was a couple of thousand years or 1500 years later. The whole of the Gemara, and the Gemara eventually said that all that everybody would ever learn or say in any class ever in the future, an intelligent student, was all said to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. So it seems to be almost some kind of mystical idea or whatever. And then we saw another bunch of sources that said, well, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu got the basic principles, the basic outlines, the rules, the klalim, very important word, klalim. That's all right. Thank you. Got the klalim on Har Sinai, got the basic methodologies, let's say. But the details were worked out, some of them at least, afterwards, which is an important word, Kali. We're going to get back to that later today. Is there another here? Does this work better, I think? Not much. Okay, fine. Now, we are going to resolve this dichotomy today. And we're going to present a solution, which is the Mahalach, which is the approach that I'm going to be taking through most of the course, as to what was given to the Jewish people at the beginning and what was developed later. Because this is really the ultimate question that we're dealing with at the beginning of this course. We're really early days here. This is only the session 2 of at least 35 Be'ezras Hashem sessions, yeah, which will help us to understand really how Halach works. Now, some of you will make it through all 35, and some of you will have to tune in on the web or whatever. But either way, it's just early days, and we'll get there. The first approach that I want to give you is not the most important one. It's just like an interesting one. And the second one is the most important, which I alluded to last time as well. Yeah, you want one of these?
No. Yeah. You said he actually got the Torah written down.
Right, so we said last time that the written Torah basically was given either, according to the Gemara, in installments over the 40 years and stitched together at the end, literally, or was given at the end. But everyone agrees that the written Torah was not given at the beginning. Except for this Gemara, this seems to say that the written Torah and the whole of Tanakh and everything was given on Har Sinai, and how could that possibly be?
You mean like including like
shoot
and everything?
Everything. It's like the most
artificial insemination.
Everything. So we have to understand what that means. Because it doesn't seem to be a rational or logical principle, it seems to be more of a midrashic idea. Mm-hmm. We have to understand what that means, and we'll get to that right now. Yeah.
Just making sure, so two of them have to be wrong, right?
What do you mean?
There are only two
options
right now.
There were three.
Three what?
Options. Interpretation.
We'll keep that question for a little bit now. We'll see what the Mahalchim are, and I'm going to give you two ways, approaches, and they're not mutually exclusive, these two approaches, as to how to resolve this dichotomy, but the second one is the more important of the two.
Okay, one has to be wrong, right?
One of what has to be wrong? No, not necessarily. You'll see how they're mutually exclusive. They're mutually inclusive. They're not mutually exclusive. In this particular case, they really don't have to be wrong. You wait till I tell you what they are, and then you'll tell me if you still think that one of them has to be wrong.
Okay.
Okay, let's... Yeah.
You said that you have, like, mahalach to synthesize those things?
Yes.
Is that, like, your chiddush?
No, it's not my chiddush. I'm not here to make chiddushim on behalf of Manning and Co. I'm here to try and teach you what the Mephoroshim say. Now, obviously, that's coming through this filter of my brain, so, you know, I'll have to hope that I get it right and daven that I'm not messing it up. But as far as I'm concerned, this is fairly clear, and there are many other sforim which can back this up.
Like the generally held consensus.
Let me tell you what it is first, and then you can tell me, then you can ask me all about it. I mean, the build-up is just phenomenal. Right, let's go. The first approach is not the most important, but you should be aware of it because it's interesting. One obvious approach is, okay, these are two different things. Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai had some kind of incredible mystical prophetic experience. Let's face it, every nevuah has an element of connection with the infinite, which you'll never fully understand, by definition. But when it comes to the Torah that was later developed, okay, so that was later developed, it's nothing to do with what Moshe Rabbeinu saw on Har Sinai. He didn't pass that on, it was later developed separately. Let's talk about that opinion right now. Look at number one. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So this is a midrash. Actually, it's a Talmud Yerushalmi. The Gemara Yerushalmi says the following: Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Ksiv v'oisi tziva Hashem. and God commanded me. So the Gemara wants to know what's and God commanded me. I see the I see. Why is the and there? So and includes that there's something that came before this. The Moshe is saying, and God commanded me to say this. Usually you only say and if something has already been before that. Ne'emar li dvarim, says the Gemara, God told me things, she'ne'emar lachem, which I need to tell you now. This is the Masorah. What does the word Masorah mean?
Tradition.
No, what does it literally mean?
Transmission.
Passed down, transmission, exactly. Masorah is transmission. So says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I've got things I need to transmit to you. And God told me other things between him and me only. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, as it were, through this Midrash, is saying, my experience on Har Sinai was not only to do with Masorah, not only to do with Torah for all eternity. It was a personal, private moment between me and God. And therefore, if you jump in here, you'll see that the in looking number 3, we had this source last time, but I'm going to read it to you again. When it talks about Moshe Rabbeinu seeing everything, look at the language it uses. Melamed sheherau HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe. God showed to Moshe, Dikdukei Torah, Dikdukei Soprim, the details of the Torah, the details of the rabbi, Umash HaSoprim had seen in the Kaddish, and everything the rabbis would ever invent in the future, all this future stuff that doesn't seem to make sense, God showed it to him. And there is a commentary on the Mishnah called the Tosfos Yontif, a very famous commentary on the Mishnah. And at the beginning of his commentary, he writes an introduction, and he deals with this question, and he says, just a one-liner from him on number 4, Amru, the rabbi said, Sheherau, that God showed him. That this is like a see-only, it's not like something, it's like a read-only PDF. Yeah? There's nothing you can do with it, you can't copy it, you can't send it any other way, it's just for you to see. The loy b'derech mesira, it was not for transmission, it was not for passing on. Like someone who shows something to their friend, Leroyce, you can see it, they don't know stuff, but I'm not giving it to you. This approach, which as I said to you before, is not the main approach, but is an interesting approach, which the Mephoshim say is, look, you can resolve this dichotomy by saying the following. When the Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu got everything, okay, so that's Nevuah, that's a prophecy. How can you and I possibly understand the prophecy that Moshe Rabbeinu got on Har Sinai? He was not even human almost anymore. He was not eating and drinking for 40 days and 40 nights. He was like a malach. He was having this ultimate, super mind-blowing planet brain vision of everything that could ever be in the future. Poseidon! So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw in Har Sinai. Has it got anything to do with what he transmitted to Yeshua? No. When he came down the mountain over the 40 years in the desert, then he gave over like practical halachas that God said to him, etc. But don't get too uptight about all this business about God gave everything at Har Sinai. Because it's got nothing to do with us. It's to do with between God and Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? You understand? It's very straightforward, but it's not very fulfilling in terms of an answer.
Even the Moshe received everything, he didn't transmit it.
Yeah. So, and there's grounds, there's sources to say that. What did he transmit? We'll see. We'll see what he transmitted. But don't get, says the Tosfos Yontif, overly worried or concerned by this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu saw what Meir was about to say right now in class, because he saw it in some kind of way that you and I don't really understand, because you're not prophet, neither am I. We are now an official non-profit organization of Jewish people. Okay? And therefore, you and I will never understand that.
This might be a bit off topic or too big of a question, but so one of the things that distinguishes Judaism from every other religion is that there was a lot of people witnessing
saying one of the things that differentiates Torah from Judaism from other religions is
like every other religion, Christianity, Islam, they all get started by one man.
Okay.
So the thing that distinguishes Judaism is the fact that we're all there.
So what are you asking?
So suggesting that Moshe was given, shown everything, but only transmitted.
Right, so fine. So I want to deal with that question head on. I don't think that's off topic, I think that's quite on topic. Because we need to get clear one thing. When the Kuzari claims and the Discovery program tells everybody, which is quite correct, that's what the Kuzari says, that the difference between Judaism and every other religion is every other religion was revealed to one or two people or a small group of people, and you either believe them or you don't. Yeah? Whereas Judaism was verified by millions of people. That's true, but that doesn't mean, and no one ever claimed that those millions of people received the Torah. When we say on Shavuos that those millions of people received the Torah, what we mean is those millions of people moved it towards Har Sinai, and they had an unquestionably accurate, true meeting with God. They experienced God, who gave them the Ten Commandments. So maybe they received the Ten Commandments, okay, if they understood it
received
directly.
It
and then, okay, so then there's a big debate. Did they receive the first, all 10? Did they receive the first two? Or did they receive all of them just as some kind of a kind of noise and they didn't understand it? There's a whole range of proportion, but nobody ever claimed that the entire Torah was given to the Jewish people, which they then faithfully passed on. They had a meeting with God where they heard, the way the Rambam says it, they unquestionably encountered the divine, and they heard God saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, Moshe, come up the mountain because I'm going to give you the rest. I'm going to give you the rest, thank you. I'm going to give you the rest. And therefore, ultimately, the entire content of the Torah is dependent on Moshe Rabbeinu accurately passing it on to us. There's no question about that. So in terms of the religion, we are different from everybody else because nobody else had a mass encounter with God or tried to make that up. But in terms of the details of Torah, 100%. Without Moshe Rabbeinu, we are stuffed. We are completely sunk. If Moshe Rabbeinu was making it up or he's not accurate, then there is no way that it works. But we were told by God that Moshe Rabbeinu is reliable. That's the point.
But we're told by Allah that...
No, millions of us were told... No, millions of us were told by God that Moshe Rabbeinu is reliable. Millions of people weren't told that Muhammad...
At that time we were told that
Yeah, yeah, that's the whole point. We heard part of the Sinai experience was not just us meeting God, but us meeting God and God giving Moshe Rabbeinu a recommendation. That's fundamental. That's how that principle works. But we didn't all receive the entire detail of the Torah. Okay? That's a very important book. And that's why one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam, which we'll deal with on our Wednesday session, is the Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, what to understand what Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah was, at Har Sinai and beyond, because unless we understand that, then we don't have any Torah.
So what were the things that Hashem directly told us in Har Sinai? Like the first two...
It's machlokes, either the first 10 commandments. By the way, there are opinions that you can learn the entire Torah out of the first 10 commandments. So indirectly, you could maybe even learn the Torah from the Torah.
But wondering, when did God sneak in this recommendation letter? Because he kept dying
No, that's midrashic already, that we kept dying. It just means that as far as I understand, the idea that we died when we saw Hashem is not like just like an account, well, first he did this, then we died, and then he did that, then we died. It's the idea that it was a supernatural encounter. That's the point. It was an encounter with the infinite and the divine that you can't really have in a purely physical sensation way. Okay, that's why we saw the voices and the. If you look more carefully, when we do the Yud Gimel Ikrim, we will look at the Sinai account more specifically, and you'll see how that fits in.
All I'm trying to say is that, like, you know, it's like a funnel. You know, God is like, and it's like, Moshe, and it's like,
Okay.
So Moshe's a little, like, you know.
How many times do you need God to do it, say for you? So, sorry, God, was that Moshe? Yeah, Moshe. Just say that again, because it's really important. Like. Said it. We heard Moshe say, God said to Moshe, come up the mountain. I'm not here to rerun the discovery program, guys. You can go to Eish HaTorah, they'll do that very nicely for you. But I'm here to clarify for you that doesn't mean that the entire Torah was sent to millions of people. We received something from God, and then the rest we received through the presence of Messiah. Now, let's get to the main event here, because we've got 40 minutes, and they are an important 40 minutes in your life. The main approach that we have now is like this. Go over to page 2. We already saw this on the last year in the Maharal. If you remember, the Maharal asked the question, I don't know if you remember this from last time, which was, how can you tell me that Moshe received the whole Torah when we see in the Chumash there were things that he didn't know? There were things that he didn't know. So how can you square that with the people asking questions? The daughters of Slavchad asked you questions. So how can you square that with the idea that he heard the whole Torah? And the Maharal's answer was, no. When we say he heard the whole Torah and all the details of the Torah, what do we mean? We mean he got some details, but he got every single methodology, every tool that was needed to be able to learn every detail out in the future. And that's very, very, very important. Have a look, please, in source number 5. The Kikol HaTorah Lamed Moshe. Did Moshe really learn the whole Torah? This is another source we had last time from Shemesh Rabbah, from the Medrash. Ela Klalim Lamado Torah Baruch Hu LaMoshe. God taught Moshe Klalim, general principles. General, let's call them tools, methodologies. What are these? I brought you a quote from a more recent commentator from the 18th century, Rav Zevulf Einhorn of Vilna, and he deals with this directly. He says, Klalim Lamad HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe. What were these Klalim? Elu Darchei Hadroshes. This is the method of drosha. This is an important word, drasha. What's lidrosh, literally?
To search.
To search, or to inquire.
To demand.
To demand. few months. It's like an insistence. Lidrosh, drosha, drasha, in this, we use the word drosha like the rabbi gives a drosha. It's just like a colloquialism. That's not really what drosha means. The word drosha, when learning oral law, means the methodology of learning a detail in halacha from the verse in the Torah through a certain kind of tool. It's like an equation. It's like a function. You know functions in maths?
Yeah?
So you have like the function is just short for do this. Apply that to this thing and you come up with a result. Okay? So here you have these drashas. A drasha is like this. Let's say you have a verse. You have a verse in the Torah like this. You have a drasha. Through that drasha you come to a halakha. Meaning, it gives you the ability to read between the lines, to see how the psukim work, to read them, if you like, with a different set of glasses on, to allow you to learn out new halachas. For example, things like in your siddur, it lists, after the korbanos in the morning, it lists 13 hermeneutical principles of Rabbi Yishmael. I don't know if you've ever noticed this. It's there in your siddur. Most people skip it. But there, just before Baruch Sha'amar, at the beginning of the morning service, you'll see the Yud Gimel Midas of Rabbi Yishmael. The Yud Gimel Midas Shehatera Nidreshet Bahem. The 13 rules of Rabbi Yishmael through which the Torah is droshed, darshened, whatever you want to use the expression. And he lists his 13 principles, famous ones, Kal V'chomer, Gezei Rishava. We'll talk about these later in the year, okay? That's just Rabbi Yishmael's list. There are other lists. There are other principles. Tens, maybe even hundreds of principles. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu got. Of course, he also got details, we'll see soon, explicitly, he got the details of how to live the mitzvah there and then. But all of the modern stuff, and you know, how to use a microwave oven on Shabbos or not, and the artificial insemination by donor and surrogate mothers and all that kind of stuff, Moshe Rabbeinu was not given all the details for that. Ah, but was he given? In principle, he was given all the details, because he was given the means to learn those details out.
But then he got like a bunch of seeds.
Right, from which he could...
There was a lot of fruit in the future.
Correct. But more than that, if you'd have sat down with Moshe Rabbeinu and said, look, Moshe Rabbeinu, it's like very important to me to know this, but am I allowed to use a microwave oven on Shabbos? Is that bishul or not? Now you might say, well, what kind of question is that? But it's actually a very good question, because bishul requires some kind of eish, usually a heat source. Electricity is bishul, gas is bishul, but microwaves don't work like that. Microwaves just excite the molecules of the food and they heat from the inside out. Is that food called cooked on Shabbos or is that not cooked on Shabbos? And my nafkimi, why is that important? So you all know, in Hilchas Shabbos, ein bishul acha bishul. If I already cooked it once, so it's not a problem to pour hot water on and reheat it, right? You know the halacha. But what if I cooked it for the first time in a microwave? Is it cooked? What is a microwave? How does that work? Can I heat it up again? Or is that cooking for the first time? I don't know, but I understand from this that Moshe Rabbeinu would have said to you, look, God never said anything about microwave ovens. Maybe in his nevuah, when he saw his nevuah of the entire future of history. So, okay, then he probably saw, but he wouldn't have told you that anyway, because that's like his private nevuah. But he said to you, look, you tell me how a microwave oven works. I have all the rules. I have all the klalim. I have all the methodologies needed. I have the chumash. What more do I need? We'll work it out. You can learn everything out from the psukim if you just know how to look at them. You know how to read them. And therefore, I brought you this source in number 7, very important source, by a book called the Doravii, who is a little known Meforish, but he wrote an important introduction where he talks a lot about Torah Shabbat. Look at what he writes in number 7. Just as in natural science, a person produces innovations with his intelligence and understanding based on old principles, so too with the science of our holy Torah. As Chazal say, if you hear the old, you will hear the new. It's very interesting. When our concept of chiddush is it comes out of something which already exists. You know the expression chadesh yomeinu ker? How's it go at the end? Kekedem. Chadesh yomeinu kekedem. Which is funny. Think about it. Renew our days just like the old ones. It's like the new comes out of the old. It's just like this. The intent is that one who incessantly occupies himself with the Torah, that is with us of old, and kills himself over it, meaning you really work hard on it, can derive totally new insights which were never apprehended before. It is in this sense that Chazal said that the Holy One, blessed be He, showed Moshe all that an experienced disciple would in future times innovate in Torah, for all that is destined to be innovated in Torah was inherent in potentia from the beginning. That's the point. And therefore later the droshes were used to learn out details. According to this approach, which is the Rambam's approach, and we'll see it more clearly as the Rambam develops it, this is not my Yiddish, nor is it coming from me, the Rambam's approach and others, what it means is as follows. A certain amount of detail was given at the beginning, but lots of the halachic detail was worked out later. And the process of using a drasha and squeezing halacha out from the verses and creating new halachas was a process that was ongoing throughout the generations of Sanhedrins, and up until a certain point in history when it stopped. And we'll have to look at why it stops and why we can't do that today. But what you have to get from this is that at late stages in history, certain people, and you're going to have to look which people, who picked them, who chose them, how do we know they got it right, what's their authority, we'll look at all of that. But this group of people created Torah Sheba'al Peh, in addition to that which was given by Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai. And we'll say this many, 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 many times over the course of the next 20 weeks or so. Does that make sense to you? I'm getting a bit of a blank feel from some of you. Is that a 558 feel, or is that just because I'm not making sense? Or because you're jealous?
558.
Oh yeah, this class is too important for 558, mate. There has to be, like a 10 in the morning class.
Yeah.
Okay? So since it's not, you have to make it. Yeah.
is it possible that although the rabbis were given the tools, that they got something wrong?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Of course, it's possible. Mistake, no one claimed infallibility. Only the Catholics claim infallibility with the Pope, yeah? We never claim infallibility, but we'll have to see why we're not playing broken telephone. First of all, this makes the whole broken telephone thing much less of a problem. Why? Because we're not just transmitting billions of pieces of information.
Yeah.
We're letting it out.
No, not broken telephone kind of wrong.
Oh, but you're saying, like, how do I know they learned it outright? Maybe the whole way. Fine, so we'll talk about that directly. You're right. It also, by the way, if you understand this properly, there's a niggling question that niggles at the back of people's minds.
You're contradicting.
What? Go on.
Using the different drushas, you can get different.
That's not the niggling question. Well, let me ask you, but let me come back to that question now directly. Are you telling me that it's reasonable to expect people to come to different conclusions if you do this?
Yes.
Oh, okay, fine. Are you happy with that, or is that it tells something that you're not happy with? There's no right answer to that question. Do you mind that they people can come to different conclusions by this?
I don't know the answer.
Okay, fine. That's a fair answer. But now let me ask you a different question.
I mean, should be money in the Torah. If there weren't different answers, there wouldn't be should be money to be found.
Oh, very good. Well, you're already putting the answer before the question. Let me put it a different way. If I told you, like some people do learn, and like most people are taught, the entire Torah and every detail in it was passed down from Moshe Rabbeinu to the next generation, and then to the next generation, which I'm not saying here, yeah, but if I said that, there would be a deeper and more troubling question, which is what?
That there are so many different versions that there must have been a corruption at some point.
Why is there machalikas? Why is there difference of opinion on so many things?
No, but
if indeed it was passed down faithfully from one generation to the next, then that niggling question at the back of my mind starts to become an alarm bell ringing in the middle of my mind. Which is why is Rabbi Akiva disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda? Why is Beit Shammai disagreeing with Beit Hillel? Who got that wrong? Where did that go wrong? According to this approach, which is the Rambam's approach, which we'll see, the very mainstream approach, that's not a question. Do you see why that's not a question? Because those disagreements that came because of what you just said before. People interpreting things in different ways. Now you can turn around and say, what's that?
They're all under the same umbrella.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. They're all using the right tools in the right way, they're seeing things differently. Now, you're going to ask me, well, why do they see things differently? We'll discuss that. Why do human beings ever see things differently? But at least you haven't got that kind of slightly sickening feeling in the bottom of your stomach that I don't know why there's so much machlokes. And by the way, that is a classic for any thinking from high school students, which actually is itself a fairly rare occurrence. But for any thinking from high school students, they come out of their high school education with that kind of feeling, if you actually press them. Fact number one, Moshe received the whole Torah and passed it down to the next generation of Har Sinai, and we've got it ever since. Fact number two, I read Torah every day, and it's full of machlokas. Put those two facts together, that's not happy. Yeah? And we're going to see the Rambam is going to go crazy with people that say that. Because it's not true, he says. And it's giving people a real problem when there is no problem. Yes.
Did Moshe learn all these things, or did he pass down like?
Good. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. Yes and yes. He started that process. The tools were passed down. Other people did that process. Other people all the way through history did it, and did it in different ways. We'll talk much more about that. We have to examine what these tools are these magical, mystical, where did they come from, who, like, we'll talk about
it. Moshe did all the learning out, then you still have the problem.
Exactly. If Moshe did all the learning out, then you're just back to square one. He did all the hard work, and we just passed it down. He didn't do all, according to this approach, he did not do all the learning out.
So Moshe didn't, so the Rambam versus whoever,
yes.
And their Machlokas,
yes.
Moshe didn't actually know that Machlokas.
Yes. Yes. What? Correct.
He didn't know. So Moshe knew literally the Torah basic, like what Hashem told him.
Yes.
And then we've developed problems.
We'll see soon. Tulsa says exactly that. We'll see soon. And it's not a problem, by the way. It's not we've developed problems. We've developed. And we'll have to see whether it's a problem or not a problem. Yes. Now.
Well, I have two things. One, isn't there such a thing called the Ilyas Adolos?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
The
answer to that question is maybe there is such a thing as Yirat HaDorot.
Okay.
There is such a view that there is a strong idea of Yirat HaDorot. Not everybody agrees with it. Most people do agree with it. But even if there is, what's your question? Why there's so much machlokas? Oh yeah, but that's not a very nice answer.
Yeah.
Like, I wake up in the morning and the Shulchan Aruch tells me to do this because it's resolved the machlokas because they got it wrong because they're also weak. Okay, so you could turn around and say, look, that's the best we can do. I agree with you. You could turn around and say, shrug your shoulders and say, look, you're right. That's the best that we have. Has anyone else got a better solution as to what God wants us to do? You could say that, yeah? But I don't like that answer. I find it a little bit of a kind of b'dievet answer. It may be an answer that someone will have to come to. Like, you tell me more accurately what God wants you to do in the morning. So yes, I've got machlokas. You haven't got anything. Which I think is logical, but I don't like it still. I want something better. Yes.
So that makes it that one person doesn't have the answer and they need to be in a discussion.
Oh, good. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the idea of machlokas being really positive and important and critical that people look at things differently. Not like try to explain away why people look at things differently. We'll talk about that. Let's look at source number 8. Source number 8 is a classic of all classics. Okay? I need someone to read this out in English, please. I translated it at the bottom. I don't normally translate sources, but this one has to be translated. Who likes speaking English? Okay. Or American would do. Yeah, please, you started off. Okay, fine. Now listen carefully because this is you've heard this source before. Let's go. It's too. We haven't enough time to have a color wars between the English and the Americans. Fine.
Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Rav. When Moshe went up to the heavenly heights, he found God sitting in time, crowned to the letter.
Right. What are these crowns? Just like a little peep on page 3. Just before you carry on, and you'll see what I mean. On top of certain letters in the Sefer Torah, in the text, you find little things called tagim, or ketarim, or crowns. On certain letters, chin, tavi, zayin, a few others. Yeah? So God was, as it were, midrashically, doodling in the Torah. Yeah? That's what it's saying. That Moshe sees God on the Torah. Now, of course, this is a midrash. This has to be read extremely in a sophisticated way to look at what is being hinted to, what is being alluded to. So let's have a look at what he says.
He said before him, Master of the Universe, who is holding you back from giving the Torah without the crown?
In other words, what are these for? I mean, like, what do I learn out of that?
God said to him, there.
Sorry, there should be a just one is, please.
Okay. There is one man who will exist in the future and many generations, and his name is
That's Rabbi Akiva, who was one of the greatest proponents of Torah Shebaal Peh.
Excuse me, yeah. In the future, he will establish from every point of the crown, heaps and heaps of halachos.
In other words, you might not understand what these little crowns mean, Moshe, but don't worry, because other people are going to do that. So it's fine.
Moshe said to God, Master of the Universe, show him to me. God answered, turn around.
Really dramatic. It's almost like, you know, choreographed, staged, like stage managed this mission. It's Midrash. So the Gemara in Menachos, very famous. She says, turn around. Yeah? So he turns around and carry on and see what happens. Look now. Now, where is he now? Moshe Rabbeinu is in Rabbi Akiva's Bet Midrash. He wants to see Rabbi Akiva. So he says, here he is. He's on the 8th row. Why is he on the 8th row?
Because he's physicality?
Correct. Why? Oh, good. Nice Maharal answer. But also, just physically, the Beit Midrash was set up, the Gemara says that there were seven rows. So he's on a row that doesn't exist. He's on the row beyond all rows. Yeah? Because he's there in a kind of, he's there, but he's not there. He's in a time travel kind of, you know.
He's like the ghost of Scrooge.
Maybe. Okay, your first answer was better. Right, fine. Let's go on.
Okay.
So he's on the eighth row.
Okay, but he did not understand what they were saying. He became disheartened.
Which is understandable because he's Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. You know, he is the route through which all Torah came. Therefore, he should know what's going on now if they're discussing. Carry on.
When they reached a certain matter, Rabbi Akiva's students asked him, Rebbe, where did you get this from? He answered them, it is halacha given to Moshe at Sinai. Moshe was relieved.
Yes, he still doesn't understand a word, but at least he thinks that, okay. What's that?
He knows he didn't give it a Sinai.
So you're asking a question. So why was he relieved? You would have expected him to be even more angry now.
Yeah.
Because this is, I never got this from Sinai. Okay? By the way, there is a Rashi on this Gemara, says that this whole episode happened before Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah. Which is a bit of a kind of like deflating answer, because then what's the whole point of the whole thing? So we're like, why? Of course he didn't understand it, because then he got it yet. And why was he bothered that he didn't understand it? Like, Rashi's answer is problematic on many levels, but that's not the only answer. Carry on. So he was relieved now.
He returned and came before God and said to him, Master of the universe, if you have a man like this, why are you giving this Torah through me? God answered him, be silent, this is my plan.
Which is another interesting answer. Look at the Hebrew for that last word, shtok, which is a bit rude. Which is a bit kind of like, it's a bit kind of, yeah, shtuk, was it? Shiv, shtuk, yeah, shut up, basically. Kach ala b'machshava lefana. This is ala b'machshava. Ala b'machshava is a kind of, it's like catchphrase. These are all phrases in Hebrew which are meant to allude to things. That's what Midrash is. Midrash is like a Havdil reading like poetry. When you read poetry and you know what you're reading, you're not just reading like someone describing, shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Oh, that's nice, talking about the sunshine. No! If you know how to read Shakespeare, the Havdil, then you know, oh no, you have to understand when Shakespeare's talking about a summer's day, he's not talking about a summer's day. He's talking about life and this and that. Look at what he said in Hamlet, look at what he said in the. That's how you read poetry. The Torah is like poetry, especially the Midrashim. So, Kach alabam machshava lefanai means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, something else very famous in Midrashic literature was alabam machshava. It says the world was meant to be created by din, with justice. Kach alabam machshava, it was meant to be the ideal plan, the initial idea. But actually, in the end, it turned out it was created in a way which human beings could understand, could live, with rachamim, etc., etc. Alabam machshava represents a potential. A potential but unreachable, if you like, goal. Yes.
It's not directly related to this, but it's to do with like transmission.
Yes. We'll get back to that. It's not true what you said, but I will get back to that kind of question because it's off this topic.
Okay.
But save it, Reba, and come back to it. Now, listen. What's going on in this midrash? The reform movement sometimes said, look, even the rabbis admitted that they made it all up. Look, it says in their own Gemara, in their own Talmud, that Moshe Rabbeinu had no clue what was going on. Therefore, you see Rabbinic Judaism. It's all like, you know, the question is like, come on, guys, why? Like, we wouldn't put this in unless we had an understanding of what it was all about. What's going on here? So, what's going on here is poshut, according to at least some. It's obvious. Is that why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu understand the details of Rabbi Akiva's Torah? It's because what did he get? Moshe Rabbeinu got the Klalim. Of course, he got his own details. We'll see in the minute the Rambam says explicitly he got his own specifics. But he also got a lot of general principles from which later generations worked out the details. So of course Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't understand the specifics, because the specifics haven't been worked out yet. But where does the halacha come from? It's halacha l'Moshe Sinai. How says Rabbi Akiva, am I able to give you this halacha? Only through the Masorah that I have, through the rules that I have, through the methodologies that I have, to be able to understand the psukim, which came down from Moshe Rabbeinu. I got the psukim from Moshe, I got the tools from Moshe, and I get on with it. And now I do it. And therefore Moshe was relieved. Because now he understands, oh, I don't understand the details, but it doesn't matter that I don't understand the details. This Gemara is an amazing proof of this idea that the Torah was worked out over generations, not just plopped into the world and transmitted. Yes, Gabby.
Why did Moshe Rabbeinu
So, like, Moshe was given principles, start yes. later, like, learned how to apply to many situations, like artificial insemination,
yes.
microwave.
And all things in between.
Okay. But this, like, crown situation.
Oh. Good.
Is.
What's with the crowns?
Right. So, I don't even know where the source for this phrase is, but I hear it a lot. Like, you're forbidden from adding and subtracting to Torah. And
yes.
Learning out learning out principles to apply to a microwave would not be doing that. But suddenly, out of nowhere, hundreds of years later, declaring there are supposed to be crowns on a letter is adding to Torah.
No, the crowns were always there. The question is, he told Rabbi Akiva was able to somehow learn stuff out from the crowns of the Torah.
I thought they weren't there the whole time.
No, they were. The crowns were always there in the text. Now, you could ask, maybe this is Reva's question, I'm not sure. There is a whole debate as to what was the script that the original Torah was given in. Because there is a script that we use, which is the block letters, it's called Ksav Ashuri, which is from Ashur, it's from a Babylonian script. There is an original Paleo-Canaanite script called Ksav Ivri, and there's a whole thing which doesn't have any crowns, and there's a whole debate as to whether the Torah was given in that script or this script. I don't know if that's what you were asking, but I don't even want to get into that now because it's a whole different shiur, and I've got like sources and charts and things like that about that. Let's just leave that on hold because I can't deal with every question, which is a big question like that. But let's understand from this that the Torah was given in Ksav Ashuri, which was given with the crowns on. The question I thought you were asking, which maybe you were also asking, is, well, what happened to all these halachas from the crowns? We don't have one single halacha in Shulchan Aruch that is learned out from these crowns. Look on page 3. How can you learn something out from that black dot, is what you're asking.
As in, you're telling me that in the Torah, there's a letter like that with the crowns.
Loads of them. Every time the Zion appears in the Torah, it appears looking like that.
So I'm saying, and then you're telling us more about the crowns?
I'm not telling you anything about the crowns, other than they're there for a reason.
Sorry.
Now,
it wasn't
rude, don't worry. You're English, I forgive you for being rude. The point here I'm saying is that maybe you could say that, you know, some of these crowns refer to the esoteric Torah, to the more Kabbalistic or mystical Torah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't know. You have to ask him. I think you should ask him a couple on that. For sure, one. It could be. The one thing's for sure, that none of the actual nuts and bolts of the Torah, in practice, are learned out from these crowns. They're learned out from much more, you know, black and white, logical, rational. And we'll see that these drushes are not just some fanciful. Also, don't get the impression. I've got three big bugbears about how people are taught in high school.
Okay.
Bugbears. You ever hear of, say, bugbears in America?
Pet peeves.
Oh. Not bed bugs. No, bugbears. Anyway, whatever, you can look it up online. I've got a couple of peeves about the way that Torah is taught in high schools. One of them is the overuse of midrashim, which are not properly explained and learned. Okay, that's one. And another one is the abuse of gematrias. Gematria abuse.
Shameful.
Gematria abuse is rife in the world. Now, it is not the worst. Don't get me wrong, guys. There are many problems in the world that we need to deal with, and I agree this is not the most pressing one. You know, millions of people starving, you know, exploitation of women. There's all sorts of things in the world that we need to get to before. But gematria abuse is rife, and I'll tell you why. Because all over the world, people are standing up making cute gematrias. Well, if you add this word up, and if you add this word up, and if you take off the number you first thought of, it comes to the same as this, that, and the other. And people listen to it, they think, you know, some people listen to it, they go, wow. I really want to be religious now for the rest of my life. Okay? And other people listen to this, and they think to themselves, is this how Judaism is, like, derived from some kind of clever numerology that they, you know, sometimes they don't even work, these things? You add them up and you say, well, it's like, it's one out. And they say, oh, no, it doesn't matter if it's one out, because it's one out, the word is that. Now, don't get me wrong. And by the way, half of these people, you see, you hear this at Sheva Brochas a lot. I hear this a lot at Sheva Brochas. It really, I can fume under my collar. Because someone just gets, you can go online and you can get these, you know, they add up the Chosin and the Kala's name.
Yeah,
you know, Shmelki and Mindel. Yeah? And they add it up and it comes to 1,966. So they go online and they find a beautiful posik to do with marriage that has the same gematria. And they stand up and they say, and of course, the gematria of Mindel Reisel, and you know, it doesn't have to be Mindel Reisel, by the way. It could be Dvorah Avigail as well, and it comes to the same as, and you shall make your wife happy for the entire first year. And everyone goes, Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, not only is that completely meaningless, and you found it on Google 15 minutes ago, but I could have found a posset from somewhere else in Tanakh with a sense of matria that was completely unsuitable for some of us. And you shall damn them for all time and cut off their ears. Or something. I'm going to stand up on Chevrolet and say, well, you see the gematria of their name equals eternal, you know. So my pet peeve is that people get the impression that this is how Torah works. And I can assure you that when we learn how gematrias really work, this is nothing to do with droshes. Droshes are not learning clever things from, like, maybe Kabbalistically. And by the way, sometimes gematrias are used by Chazal as a kind of, as the icing on the cake. As a flourish. The Chazal called gematrias parporos l'toira, like the icing on the cake at the end of the meal. But they're not the mean potatoes. The mean potatoes are droshes, and we'll learn how they work. They're logical, they're rational, they make sense, they're based on psukim, they're people thinking hard about what textual verses mean and learning halachas from them. So if you, like me, get upset about gematria abuse, don't worry, because I'm going to set up a blog or a help group or something. I'm going to set up something. Yeah. You are not alone.
I thought there were like only a few gematria that were okay.
Yeah, there aren't that many. Most of the ones that people quote are made up later, but there are people who get into them. Like, don't get me wrong. For certain things, if you look at the Perush of the Tur on the Torah, he often uses gematrias to bring like remazim, a remez, to different ideas. That's beautiful. He's learning Chumash, he's learning Parsha. There's nothing wrong with that. That's exactly what it's meant for. He's not learning halacha. The Torah would have run a mile if you'd have suggested that he would use gematrias to learn halachas.
It's the same with biblical code.
Don't even get me close. Go speak to Rabbi Kolinsky about it. Okay, fine. That's fine. Let's go. Listen. Yes, Aviva. Was I?
One opinion.
Yes.
That says you got everything on
Mount Sinai. Yeah. We saw that in the Gemara. Yeah. So what we're saying that means now is that Moshe Rabbeinu sees everything as potential. That means Moshe Rabbeinu sees everything on Mount Sinai. Let me give you an example.
Well, I was more focused on the one that did say they saw everything.
Yeah. I'm saying that. What does that mean? It means that he got everything because he was able to produce everything. Even though he himself may not have received everything, let me give you a raya, proof of that. Look at number 11. Number 11 is a Ramban on the Sefer Mitzvot, the Nachmanides. He's talking about a very interesting question.
What number, sorry?
Number 11. Source number 11. Okay?
Every detail.
Yeah, so again, what does that mean? Midrashically, what we mean by... Look, it's explicit here, look. Go back to source number 7.
So you're saying, I understand your point.
Yeah, so what are you saying? What are you asking me?
So I understand, like, that this thing, what is it in potential?
Yeah, so what are you asking me?
So I'm asking you, wasn't there another, that you said maybe it's in summer, that was like, there is one person...
No, I said this today, and I said it last time, that is the one that every single thing was given to Moshe Rabbeinu.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm saying what that means is, that opinion means that those speakers were given to him in potential. Then what he had it, if you like.
There is no opinion that actually...
According to this, there is no opinion. Unless you take the views like in his Nebuah or something like that.
You've reconciled the paradigm.
I've tried. Look at number 11. Look at number 11. He's giving a very interesting... The Ramban is talking about the Mitzvah of Hanukkah. Okay? Now, the Mitzvah of Hanukkah was innovated by the rabbis. Moshe Rabbeinu never kept Hanukkah. David the Melech never kept Hanukkah. If you'd have gone up to David the Melech and said, what do you think we should do on Hanukkah? I'm sure he would have told you, unless on some mystical level, which I maybe, you know, great man, I'm sure he was on a mystical level. On a basic, you know, normal Jewish level, he would have said, I don't know what Hanukkah is. Because Hanukkah started 700 years after David the Melech. And yet, when you make a brocha on Hanukkah candles, what brocha do you make? Asher kiddushanu. The mitzvah is that God sanctified his commandments. Vitzivanu, and God commanded us lahadlik neshel Hanukkah. Well, not only Hanukkah candles, but even Shabbos candles. The mitzvah to light Shabbos candles is a rabbinic mitzvah. It came much later, 1,000 years at least after the Torah was given, and therefore, when you light Shabbos candles, don't worry, Israel has all that. When you light Shabbos candles, you say Vitzivanu lahadlik neshel Shabbos, lahadlik neshel Shabbos. Oh, is that over?
Yeah, he's like, oh,
Why?
Maybe it's not so alright.
Why?
So let's go and call. Is someone dealing with it?
Oh my gosh. Oh. Can we pass on?
Okay, let's pause the. There's an enormous amount of hypocrisy. No. Yeah. Didn't say that Moshe Rabbeinu said to turn lights on in the Torah. Yeah? Well, there's no electricity 3,000 years ago. Silly. Yeah? You've had those arguments with people so many times. Whereas actually, when you scratch below the surface, usually they're based on like no knowledge of any kind at all.
The error.
So listen, look at the Ramban. Look at number 11. Kaven Shinala Moshe B'Sinai. Since it was said to Moshe on Sinai, Moshe did receive Sheyikablu Aleihim Yisrael mitzvahs based in Hagadol, that the Jewish people had to accept upon themselves the mitzvahs of the based in, of the rabbis. In other words, one of the mitzvahs given to the Jewish people by God is to accept the mitzvahs of the rabbis. That is one of the 613 mitzvahs, and we'll deal with that in detail. Ubao Heim for Tiknu Es Eidu, and then the rabbis later came and told you, light Hanukkah candles, light Shabbos candles, etc. Kfar Nemru Kulam the Moshe Sinai, that means they were all given to Moshe on Sinai. Right. In other words, when that's why we say the Sivanim. God told us to light Hanukkah candles. Why? Because God told us to listen to the rabbis, and the rabbis told us to listen to light Hanukkah candles. And then the last few words are very important. The Ein Hefresh Beinehem Ba'amira Sinai. There's no difference between the things that were said explicitly on Sinai and the things that were said because of what was said on Sinai. And then she's never pressed and never cloud. One was said specifically, and one was said in a more general way, clalim, in a more. You understand? This is a very fundamental Jewish idea in Torah Shabbat Peh. And I need to wrap it up in 5 minutes.
Why does it say in the Torah that we should listen?
We will have a whole share on that. They are psukim at the beginning of Parsha Shoftim. We will analyze them and see exactly who it's talking about, what it means, etc. But there is one of the 613 commandments to listen to the rabbis and what they say. Which rabbis? What kind of things? We will deal with that in Reva.
We'll
deal with all that. We'll have a whole session, if not two, on that.
So I feel like after this, that it's a bit delicious.
Why? Because you like the idea that everything really came from God directly and was just passed down.
No, because all I've ever learnt was that.
We'll see hopefully soon that the idea that I'm expressing here, that the Torah was later, in your words, elaborated, I like that word, and developed, rather than delegitimizing the Torah, actually legitimizes the Torah. Now, it makes more of it man-created.
Right.
Yes, it does. But actually, that's also not a problem for reasons that we'll see soon. Because you don't ask for shilas to God. All Torah, Lemaisa, today is man-created. In the sense that when you have a shila, you don't dial, 613-613-613 and see who answers. You never dial that in America? I'd love to dial that in America. I always forget when I'm in America. Yeah? Anyway, Vaita, I need to summarize because it's the end of the day and you're already tired and I need to summarize the following. So listen, so bottom line, girls, bottom line, what was given on Hashi now? What was given? So have a look at number 14. More than just that. So the Rambam says that, you should know, Kikol mitzvah shenasam HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom, every mitzvah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, nitna lo bepeirushan, was given with its own peyush, was given with its own explanation. Not that just that Moshe got vague outlines, and he came down out of the tent, one day and said, look, boys and girls, there's good news and there's bad news. New mitzvah today, it's great. The mitzvah is, sit in a sukkah. Well, what's a sukkah? I don't know, we'll have to just work that one out over generations. No, that's clearly not true. And we'll see where we get this from, is the whole posuk, etc., etc. So we're not suggesting that Moshe Rabbeinu really had no clue. He got basic kind of outlines and everything was. No, of course. The oral law is the rule book. It's the user guide that allowed Judaism to be a usable, workable religion. Says the Rambam, let's finish off. By the way, where this Rambam is from is a very important source of material on Torah Shabbat, which we'll be drawing from a lot. His introduction to the Mishnah. More about that another time. Hayya'ayna lo mitzvah. God would tell him a mitzvah. The achakach ayna lo peyushav inyana. And afterwards he would tell him all the details, all the explanations, all the inyanim, all the specifics. So yes, of course Moshe got details, and those details were passed down. That's sometimes something that we call halacha le Moshe Misina. Halacha directly given to Moshe on Sinai. but he also got other things, and therefore I want to draw on the board to summarize, to leave you with this, a diagram that you've seen before if you've been to my classes before, and that you will have printed on your brains. So when you look, you know, on the beach, when you close your eyes and look in the sun, you'll just see this diagram on the front of your, on your retina. This is what you will see, because I will draw it on the board so many times. It is the structure, according to the Rambam, of Torah Shabbat. He actually divided it into five, but for now we'll divide it into three, because two of the five really fit into the other columns. Now, there are three things, therefore, that the oral law isn't, but this I'll finish in the 2 minutes that I've got. Number one, there is... I can't write the pen, they're right.
Should I go to the other room?
Is there another...
Yeah, there's another one there.
Yeah, just running at me.
We should
make
you a poster.
Yeah, we should make this a poster. Halakha Lemoshe Mitzinai. Meaning, details, okay? Moshe Rabbeinu definitely got details. And those details are what we call Halakha Lemoshe Mitzinai.
Like what's the silver?
Yeah, exactly. Very good example. Thank you so much, Mira. Like, what are tefillin? Tefillin, nowhere does it say in the Torah what tefillin are. It calls them totafot. There is no indication of that, that they are black, leather, and square. You can't learn that out from the psukim, that they are black, red, leather, and square. Maybe they are pink, fluffy, and round. Okay? Maybe they could be. Okay? This, the idea that they're black, leather, and square, is a halakha l'moshe Sinai. Therefore, the job of the Jewish people after that is oh, this is the one. Sorry.
Job.
Transmit. Oh.
That's so good, isn't it?
It's so good.
Wait, so halakha
Listen, transmit. Meaning, all I'm doing is passing this down from one generation to the next. Yes, Daniela, when you learned that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and passed down through all generations, what you learned was correct for column one. Yes, there was an element of Torah which had that hand to it. But there's much more to say, because here we have the klalim, okay? The general principles, which make drashot, and that is learned over here. The general principle here is interpret. And then that's how it works. It's not just transmit, it's interpret. It's something that gets developed over time through each generation. We'll see who and why and how, etc. And the third column is, which we haven't even talked about, except indirectly, rabbinic law. Rabbinic law is brought in later by the rabbis. And of course rabbinic law was not given at Har Sinai. But the job there of the rabbis was to legislate. And when you now open up the Gemara, which is our repository of Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara consists of a combination of these three things. We'll see this clearly in the Rambam later. It consists of some details which were given to Moshe on Har Sinai. It consists of some details which were worked out later by the rabbis and made part of the Torah system. And it consists of rabbinic law as well, which was developed and legislated later.
So Hanukkah is rabbinic law?
Yeah, Hanukkah falls in here. You should be able to take every detail of halacha, every mitzvah, everything you do which is halachic in your entire life, and fit in one of these boxes. This column is Rabbanon. This column is Doraita, obviously, in the Torah. What about this column? Let's talk about this.
Wait, how can that be
derived? It's the writer.
How can it be derived if it's not the written law? How is the oral law
derived? No, first of all, the oral law is derived, because means it comes from the Torah itself, as opposed to later from the rabbi. The tefillin, it's not written anywhere that tefillin are black and square, but that's the writer, they have to be black and square. The writer doesn't just mean what's written, it means what comes from the oral law, so the written one. This column we'll have to talk about, because it's more complicated, but of course now is not the time. I wish you all a good evening. I hope that fellow is okay, who was knocked over outside. Please God, he will be. And I wish you all a good evening.